Okay, we're beginning here on the middle of Mem Bet Amud Aleph by the two dots. The Gemara here is discussing the last part of the Mishnah, which is Mei Tashmisho Shel Nachtom, the water that's used to clean the hands of the bakers. That water has problems because the baker's cleaning off the flour and the dough that's on his hands, and then it's sitting inside of this water, and it could ferment, it could leaven inside of the water. So Tani Hachada Shofchim B'Makom Midron. And when you dispose of the water, you have to do it in a place that's on an incline or a decline, somewhere where the water will run off and not gather. But you can't pour it into a place that is a cavity where the water can collect, because if the water collects, it'll sit. And if it sits, then it will ferment or it will leaven. We have another braita that says, you're allowed to pour it into an area that's a cavity. So, lo kasho, ha denefishe. If you have a lot of water, the kavuk, so they collect. They don't get absorbed into the ground so fast, so they have time to sit there, and that causes the problem. If there's a limited amount of water, the low kavu, so they don't get together. I mean, they're absorbed into the ground, and you don't have to worry about it. So here again, the Shbo and Rashi says it's Lashon Shvira. It's a Lashon of breaking, which we're talking about within the bedrock, or something that creates a cavity, a cleft of some sort in which the water can gather. And so the amount or the volume of the water will make a difference. If you have a large volume of water, it'll sit for duration, and that'll cause you a problem. Whereas if you have smaller volumes of water, it'll get absorbed, and you won't have a problem. So that'll be the difference between the two braitot over here. Amar Rav Yehuda, Isha lo tilosh ele b'mayim shelanu. A woman should only knead with water that sat overnight. You can't use fresh water to knead the dough of the matzot, but rather it has to sit overnight and then only use the water in the next morning. And as Rashi explains, because we're talking about in Nisan, we're talking about the springtime, and in the springtime the air, the ambient air, is still cold outside, whereas the water is coming from the mayanot, is coming from the springs. And according to the Gemara later on Sadi Daled in the ninth parak, that the springtime the sun is low on the horizon, or goes underneath the earth, and it heats the mayanot, it heats the springs underneath, and therefore the water from the springs is warmer than the ambient air. And so because of that, it causes a certain amount of fermentation or leavening. So because of that, we say leave the water overnight so that it will reach the ambient air temperature, or match the room temperature, and then you can use it, which is still the practice today. If you go to any matzah baking factory, they have large containers or vats where they put water in the day before, and then they use that water, they utilize that water the next day. Darsha Rav Matna bepopaniya. So Rav Matna went and was doresh in public this necessity to have the water sit overnight. But he did it in Hebrew. Lamachar, aitu kuli alma chatzvayu. The next day, everybody came with their pitchers. Va'atu legabe, and they came to him, v'amrule, havlan mayo, give us some water. Because they thought that he had said, maim shelanu, our water. So you have to use our water, not maim shilanu, water that had sat overnight. They thought of it as his water. So they all came to get water from him the next morning in order to make their matzot. Amar lahu, ana b'maya devitu amre. When I said that maim shilanu, I meant water that sat overnight, that slept overnight, rested overnight, meaning that it was left for the 24 hours so that it would reach the room temperature or the ambient air, and therefore you could use it for the baking of the matzot. Dorish Rava, Isha lo tilosh bechama. A woman should not knead for the matzot in the sun, meaning out in the sun where it's exposed to the heat, because that could cause leavening. Velo bechamei achama, and not with water that was heated by the sun, because then again it's too hot to utilize, or too warm to utilize, which causes an acceleration of the chimutz, which we saw before, that if you knead with poshrim, then it causes an acceleration in the leavening, so we don't want that to happen. And you cannot use water that was taken out. It's the residual water at the base of the copper urn. The moliar is mentioned in the Gemara and Shabbat and Perek Akira. It was a copper urn or basin that had a area where you deposited the coals inside of it, inside, and then you had the water inside. And because of the thickness of the copper and the coals being on the inside, it maintained its heat for a decent duration. And that hot water, even if you take that which is the residual water, it's still warm, it's still hot, and you should not utilize that for baking of the matzot. V'lo takbia yadam min ha-tanur, and when she's engaged in making the matzot, she shouldn't leave them for a second, meaning that she should work them knead them, and then put them into the oven and stay with them all the way through the process and not leave them at any point. Ad shtigmor et kol hapat, until she finishes everything that's there. V'tzricha shnei kelim, and she needs two utensils there with water. Echad shemikatefet bo, one that she uses to baste the matzot, that she uses to put on the dough. And v'chad shemitzanenet bo et yada, and one which, when her hands warm up or heat up from working the dough or from the oven, that she dips the hand in there to cool off. She has one of them as a cooling area that she can put her hands in to cool it down so that it doesn't get too hot or too warm and cause extra leavening. And then the other one, which is the water she's using to baste with the chalot or the matzot here, which she keeps separate. So that way that they have the fresh water that's used for the basting and the cooling water, which is separate. Ivailuhu. Mara poses a question. Avra v'lasha. What happens if she went ahead and she did knead with any of these items that we said she should not knead with? She did not heed the restriction, and she went ahead and did it anyway. Mau, what's the din? Marzutra amar. Marzutra says, mutar, you can utilize it anyway. Meaning that if she does it, and we see that it's not become chametz, and she guards it, then it's permissible for her to use it. Vashi amar asur. It's problematic. Amar marzutra mina aminolo. I can prove to you that it's fine. Ditanya, we just had this in Daf Mem. Ein lototim ha-si'orim be-pesach. You're not allowed to soak the barley on Pesach because of the fear of chimutz. Vim latat, if he did do it, if he did soak the barley, nitbaku, if they cracked, then asurim, because then there's a sign of chimutz there, or there's a risk that the water entered in and caused chimutz. Lo nitbaku, if they're still whole and they're still smooth, mutarim, then you can utilize them because there's no fear of chametz. So basically, we have a suggestion, don't soak the barley. If you go ahead and the barley is soaked, then we do a check and we figure out, is it chametz or it's not chametz? And if it's not chametz, it's permissible to use it. So Marzutra is extrapolating from that and saying the same thing here. She may not use these items because they cause accelerated chimutz. But if she does go ahead and use them, then let's check and see if there is chimutz or not chimutz, similar or parallel to what we do by the soaking of the sorim. Vashi amar, atu kula chada mechita mechitinu, are all weaves woven in the same manner? How can you extrapolate from one to the other? Hechad itmar itmar. Wherever the chachamim said it's mutar to check and utilize it, that's fine. Hechad lo itmar lo itmar. Where it's not said, it's not said. So the simple way to read it is that the chachamim, in some cases, felt that there is a fear or a risk of chametz, but it's a lower risk so that you can check afterwards. If you do violate and you do go ahead and do it against the suggestion of the chachamim, we can check the post the fact and see whether it's chametz or not. In other cases, because the acceleration or the chances or risks of chametz are so high, then even after the fact, the chachamim are not going to permit it because of that risk. That's the simple way to read it. Rashi, on the other hand, says something very interesting. Rashi suggests over here that it's a knas. It's a fine. It's a penalty. It's punitive. So therefore, in a case where you violate the divrei chachamim, and the chachamim say we're not going to penalize you, so that's fine. But in cases where they didn't say anything, then the assumption is that they want to penalize and have something punitive because you did not follow the words of the Chachamim. So Rashi terms it in the negative formulation, which is that it's about a penalty or a fine from the Chachamim because you did not follow the Divrei Chachamim. I think you could have read it simply as a difference in risk level or a difference in the Chachamim's assessment of that situation as whether they wanted to, after the fact, allow you to search or check for chametz. All right, with that, we end the second parak. Now we begin the third parak. The third parak deals with different types of chametz. We have basically three categories of chametz, which is you have chametz be'en. Chametz be'en is real chametz, bread, items that are completely and totally leavened items. Then you have chametz, what's called chametz de tarovet, chametz which is mixed in with other items or somehow not by itself or visible as chametz. And then we have the last category, which is called chametz nuksha, which is chametz that is hardened. And so we have different opinions amongst the Tanaim as to what the restrictions are with each one of these. And in tomorrow's daf, we'll deal with where the source within the Psukim for these different types of chametz and the restrictions of that chametz on Pesach. Our Mishnah in general seems to be dealing with what we call chametz al-yedei tarovet. It's not pure and absolute chametz. It's not bread. But there are items that use flour in them or use grains in them, and they're mixed with water. And therefore, there's a fermentation or a leavening within the item, but it's mixed in. I mean, it's not the only thing that's there. It's part of a greater mixture that's there. So that's what we call chametz ayadei tarovet. There is a part of the Mishnah, but I might be talking about chametz nuksha as well. So the Mishnah begins, Ve'elu ovrim b'Pesach. For these, you violate something on Pesach. Rashi claims, ovrim here is b'bal yire'eh o b'al yimatzeh. You're in violation of ownership of chametz and the necessity to rid oneself of chametz if you have these on Pesach. So it's under the same din as regular chametz and seor that you have to rid yourself of it on Pesach. And if you keep it, then you're in violation of b'al yire'eh o b'al yimatzeh. The Rabbeinu Tam is not comfortable with that explanation because he says when you're talking about chametz ayidei tarovet, the source in the psukim is only about eating it. One may not consume such chametz, but in terms of the necessity to get rid of it or bayire bayimatzei, it doesn't seem that that's necessarily covered, or chametz ayidei tarovet is covered by bayire bayimatzei. And therefore, the Rabbeinu Tam says, what does ovrim mean? Ovrim perush ha'ochlim ovrim mi'ala shulchan. These items must be removed from the table. They cannot be served on Pesach because you may not eat them. You may not consume them on Pesach because there's an Isur Achila and possibly an Isur Hana'ah associated with them. But they don't have the same din as Echametz Be'en, which requires the Bayireh or Bayimatzeh. Because the La B'nei Mechon Ninu Aval Bayireh Leka. He says you may not eat them, but there is no din of Bayireh. And that's why there are some people that have the minhag on Pesach when they are selling their chametz, that they only sell chametz. That's not chametz gamur or chametz be'en. Because chametz be'en has this requirement of bayire or bal yimatzeh, whereas by chametz ayidei tarovet or chametz nuksha, there is a lot more room for maneuverability, and there may not be an isur of bayire or bal yimatzeh. Because of that, they're more willing to use the dispensation of selling the chametz in order to avoid the problems of ownership of chametz on Pesach. So whether it's Rashi who says, Elovim b'Pesach b'ayireh b'yimatzeh, or according to Rabbeinu Tam, these have to be removed from the table because you cannot serve these items on Pesach. These items are Kuteach HaBavli. This is the Babylonian dip. It was a Babylonian cheese dip that involved moldy bread. It had some whey in it. It had other items in it, and it was a very pungent dip that was kept over a long duration. V'sheichar hamadi, and this is Median beer. V'chometz edomi, and edomite vinegar. V'zeituma mitzri, and this is an Egyptian type of beer, their version of beer. V'zoman shel tzvaim, and the dye of the dyers. V'amilan shel tabachim, and the dough of the cooks or the butchers. The kolan shel sofrim, and the glue of the scribes. Again, the Gemara is going to go through each of these items, so I'm just giving you the highlights of them, and then the Gemara will explain each one of them. V'le'ezer omer af tachshitei nashim. So too, the adornments of the women. And of course, the question is, what does that mean? Adornments of the women, why are they problematic? So zekval, this is the principle. Koshu mimin dagan, anything that's a derivative of grain, or zeh over b'pesach, it's problematic on Pesach. Hare elu ba'azhara. These only have a restriction of a lav, ve'ein behem mishum karet, but they do not have a chiyuv karet associated with them, and that's what we're going to see later on in the Gemara, that with regards to chametz ayidei tarovet, there's an isur lav associated with eating it or consuming it, but they don't have the isur karet. Isur karet is reserved for seor and chametz be'en, but not for chametz ayidei tarovet. Now the Bach over here suggests, based on what Tosfot says in Rabbi Lezer's opinion, Rabbi Lez over here says that the Takshite Nashim are also problematic. Tosa makes a comment, Hainu Chametz Nuksha, that this is Chametz Nuksha, which is this hardened Chametz, Chametz that's almost not edible anymore. So what the Bach suggests over here is that the Machloket between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Lezer in the Mishnah is that the Tanakhama believes that Chametz Nuksha is only a problem when it's pure Chametz. When you take dough and you harden the dough, now it becomes a solid object and you can sit on it, you can use it as a stool, so on and so forth. That's chametz nuksha, but that's from be'en, from chametz that is completely chametz. What Rabbi Eliezer is suggesting over here that in the Mishnah of Tarovet, he suggests that chametz nuksha ayedei tarovet is also problematic. So the takshidei nashim, which is chametz nuksha, is hardened type of chametz, but it's made up of tarovet. It's not from pure chametz, but it's made up of a mixture. That's what the Rabbi Eliezer restricts. But that's different than the Tanakhama. Tanakhama only says that tarovet by itself is problematic, but not tarovet that ends up in chametz nuksha. So that's what the Bach suggests is the difference between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Lezer in the Mishnah. Right, Tanabanan. Shlosha dvarim ne'amarim b'kuteach ha'bavli. There are three things that are said about this Babylonian dip. Mitamtemet alev, clogs the heart. Umesameh et ha'inayim, it diminishes or causes blindness in the eyes. umachisha de guf, and it weakens the body. Now the Gemara explains why. Mitamtem et alev, it clogs the heart. Mishum nisyuve de chalva, because of the whey that is inside of it. Umisame et einayim, causes blindness or problems with vision. Mishum milcha, because it has salt in there. As Rashi points out, we're talking about melech stomit, the same reason that you wash mayim achronim, because of the melech stomit that can cause blindness. So too, this type of salt, or this very strong salt, is found in this Babylonian dip. Remember, this Babylonian dip is made up of a lot of pungent items. So the salt you're going to use is a strong salt as well. Umachisha deguf, and it weakens the body, mishum kumnita deuma. Because of this kumnita deuma, as Rashi explains over here, is the ipusha depat. That is the moldy, or the decay, of the bread, because the bread goes stale or moldy, and that is part of this dip that gives it its pungency, is leaving the bread in there as it goes bad. So that's what causes weakness of the goof, because you're eating this bread that is obviously not a fresh or high-quality bread anymore, because it's decayed or deteriorated with inside of the dip. So you have this moldy or stale bread, together with whey or a cheese of some sort. It is milchik, the kuteach abavle, and you have this salt, the strong salt, the melech stomit, that's inside of it. Tanu banan. Gimel dvarim marbim hazevil. There are three items that act as a laxative. Mikofim et akuma, and they cause a person to bend over, or they ruin their uprightness. Vinotlim echad mechamesh meot mor inam shel adam, and they diminish one's eyesight by 1/500. So here, these are detrimental to one's health, but they have the benefit of being a laxative. Eluhain, one is pat kibar, whole wheat bread. V'sheichar chadash, fresh beer, b'yerech chai, and raw vegetables. So they see all of these items as being fibrous, and therefore a laxative. So they're helpful in terms of that. But on the other side, the Gemara views them as negative in terms of the health of the individual. They diminish their eyesight, and they cause their uprightness to be bent over, meaning that it's not good for the health of one's body. Which is interesting. We're going to see now the opposite, and then we'll speak about it. Tanu banan. There are three things that reduce a person's need to defecate. But on the other hand, they give a person strength in a strength of body. And they improve the person's eyesight. And these are they. Pat nikia, white flour or white bread. Basar shamein, fat meat or fatty meat. Ve'yayin yashan, an aged wine. So this is interesting because obviously today, we have just the opposite, which is in the time of the Gemara, and until more recent times, consider white bread or refined bread was the bread of the rich, because they're the only ones who could afford to make the white bread in that way. And that was considered to be a premium product and an item that was healthier. Whereas the whole wheat bread was the food of the poor, because they didn't have the ability to refine the flour, and it was viewed as being less healthy. And obviously today we see just the opposite. And so somebody pointed out to me, it's an interesting way of evening out the world, that the rich people are eating the unhealthy food and the poor people are eating the healthy items here. And the same thing with basar shamein, again, fatty meat is viewed there as healthy, and we know today, obviously, that that's not the case. And yain yashan is aged wine, that seems to have stayed pretty much the same, which is that there are benefits to the drinking of aged wine. So now the Gemara explains each one of them. Patnikia, what does that mean? Clean bread. Desmida, you use fine flour, using refined flour or white flour. Basar shemein, what is this fatty type of meat? Ditzvirta deleftach, it's from an eiz shelo yalda. It's from a goat that has not given birth, so therefore it's a high fat content in it. Yain yashan, what is this aged wine? Atik atike, it's old, or really old. As Rashi says, it's 3 years. It's at least 3 years old. That is considered to be aged wine. Kol mile demali dahai, kasha dahai. What we just saw from what we just said before these braitot is, whatever is good for one thing, it turns out to be detrimental for the other. With the kasha dahai, and what's detrimental for this, mile dahai. So anytime you have these foods that are efficacious in one area of health, they turn out to be detrimental to someone's health in another area. There's nothing that is comprehensively healthy or positive for you, because each one has a side effect. And because of that side effect, if you're taking it to improve one condition, it'll end up hurting you in another area. So that's true of all these items. Bar, the exception to that rule is mizan gvila retiva. So zan gvila, as Rashi says over here, is zinzibara, which is either zanzibar or ginger, moist, ginger or Zanzibar, upilpile arichta, long peppers, upatnikia, and white bread, refined bread, ubasar shamein, fatty meat, v'yayin yashan, and aged wine. Tamale de kule gufe. These items are all around positive for one's health. So these items, even though actually we saw before, which is that those items don't act as a laxative, but that doesn't necessarily have to be negative. But otherwise, the properties of these items are that they impart a healthiness to the individual, and therefore they're viewed positively by Chazal. Sheikhar Hamadi, talking about the median beer, Durame Bay Meitzare, because they put into it the water of the barley, meaning the water of the hops, is what's used to make this Sheikhar. V'chometz Edomi, and we're talking about vinegar from Edom, the Shadube Tzare. They throw the barley into the wine to cause it to go bad, meaning to ferment, and turn into vinegar. That's how they cause the wine to turn into vinegar, is by putting barley inside of it. So in the case of the beer is the water of the barley, and it's the hops, it soaks in the hops, and that creates the beer. Whereas over here, the problem with the chometz is that it actually has barley put into it in order to create the chometz. Amar of Nachman. Rav Nachman says, "Bitchila shayu mevin nisachim Yehuda." In the beginning, when they used to bring the wine libations from Yehuda, lo haya yenam Yehuda machmitz. Then the wine in Yehuda did not naturally ferment or become vinegar. Ad shenotim letochan seorim. You need an accelerator to cause that to happen. They had to put barley in there to cause the wine to turn into vinegar. But the natural state of wine was that it did not turn into vinegar. And as Rav Nachman is pointing out, that's b'schut ha-nisachim. That's in the merit of the wine libations that was the case. And they used to call it chometz. That's what's regular chometz that you would find in Yehuda. Is this chometz that had the accelerator of barley to create the chometz. V'achshav, but today, achshav meaning when we no longer have the mikdash and there are no longer wine libations brought from Yehuda, ein yenam shel edomim machmitz. Then the wine of the Edomites does not turn into vinegar, ad shenotnim letochan seorim, until you put the barley inside of it. V'korinoto chometz ha'edomi. And that's what the Mishnah is mentioning over here. This is chometz ha'edomi, the chometz from Edom, which creates the vinegar by having the barley placed inside of it. The kayeh meshenemar, basically the crown has been passed from Yehuda to Edom, and that fulfills what is said in the pasuk in Yechezkel. The pasuk in Yechezkel says, Ben Adan, Yan asher amar tzor al Yerushalayim, tzor being a representative of Edom, says about Yerushalayim, Ha'ach, nishbara daltot amim, naseba elai, imala acharava. I am satiated, I am filled with the destruction of Yerushalayim. And this is a similar to a Gemara that's found in the beginning of Megillah and Daf Vav Amud Aleph in Megillah, where the Gemara discusses that when Caesarea is ascendant, then Yerushalayim is in desolation. And when Yerushalayim is ascendant, then Caesarea is in desolation, Caesarea being the seat of Rome in Judah. And therefore, when they're talking about Caesarea, they're talking about the ascendancy of Rome. When Rome is ascendant, then the Jews are on the down. And when the Jews are on the up, meaning that Yerushalayim is ascendant, then Caesarea is on the down. So they use that as a mashal to describe the seesaw effect between the Jews and the Esav, Bnei Esav, which is that there is this balance between them where if one is ascendant, the other one has to be down. They're never ascendant at the same time. And that's what the Gemara says here, Imle Azu, Charvazu. If this one is built or satisfied, Charvazu, then the other one is destroyed. Imle Azu, if this one is filled, then the other one is destroyed. Meaning that they're never together at the same time. They're never satiated or ascendant at the same time because they basically are competitors for the leadership or the crown. Rav Nachman Yitzchak Amar Mihocha, and that is true, and that's what Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak says. We get it from the pasuk by the nevuah that was given to Rivka when she has the twins inside of her and she's investigating as to why she's having such difficulty in her pregnancy, which is Lo'om Mil'om Ye'ematz, and the nations will fight to see who is stronger or who is ascendant. I mean, there will always be a competition between Yaakov and Esav as to who is the ruler. And the pasuk continues, Ravav Yavod Tzair, right? That the objective is to have that the older one is subjugated by the younger one, that Yaakov be ascendant. But it's clear from the bracha of Yitzchak, which is that when Yaakov doesn't act properly, that Esav will return to being in the ascendant position. So now the Gemara says that's why in the Mishnah, Chometz Edomi is problematic. Generally, vinegar should not be problematic on Pesach because it's simply wine that went bad. But why is it Chometz Edomi problematic? It's because the Edomite wine does not naturally go bad or turn into vinegar. It needs this accelerator. It needs the barley to be placed inside of it, which was once the purview of the Jews of Yehuda. And that's what the way their wine was because of the Zchut HaNisachim. But once the Mikdash is destroyed, that quality of wine moved from the Jews' wine or the wine of Yehuda to the wine of the Romans. Tanya, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Bihuda Barishona, in Yehuda, in the beginning, someone who bought vinegar from an Amaretz, Einu Tzarich Laser. He would not have to take off Trumot and Masrot from it. Mideisha Chazakah, Einu Baila Mina Temed. It's a Chazakah that we assume that this vinegar came from Temed. Temed is water that is poured over the residual or the residue of the sediment of the wine or the grapes, and then it just comes out to be water afterwards. But the flavor, pungency, smell of the grapes is imparted to the water, and that gives the water a certain amount of fermentation capabilities, and that water can then turn into vinegar. So the assumption being in the beginning, when the Mikdash was still extant, that the chometz, vinegar in Yehuda, did not come from wine, because the wine didn't go bad. So where did you get vinegar from? They did it through using this temet. So temet is water. Vachshav, but today, okay, chometz ma'ama aretz. If you buy chometz from an amaretz today, tzarech laser. Now you take off masrot, shechazkato and you buy lamina yayin. The chazaka is that it comes from wine today, because of what we just described before, which is in the past, the wine did not naturally turn into vinegar, but today it does naturally turn into vinegar, and therefore the assumption is that the vinegar came from the wine. And that'll make a difference in whether you're chayav in masrot or not in masrot, and we'll see in a second why that is. Based on this, it suggests that if the vinegar comes from temed, it would not be chayav in shmot masrot, and that's why you don't have to worry about it if it came from an amaret. On the other hand, if the vinegar came from wine, which does have a requirement of shmot masrot, it would be a problem, and that's why you can't buy it from the amaret, or you can't assume that they took off shmot masrot. So now, the Gemara says, based on that, it must be that Rabbi Yehuda holds that temed does not have a requirement of shmot masrot. So the Gemara challenges that, v'savar Rabbi Yehuda, temed lav bari surehu. Does Rabbi Yehuda really believe that temed, this type of water that's passed over the sediments of the wine, that there's no requirement of Shemot Masrot? V'hatnan, we have a Mishnah in Masrot, Amit Tamed, Natan Mayim B'Midah. He puts in water at a certain volume, Matzakadei Midato. When it comes out the other end, it's the same volume. So it hasn't absorbed anything from the sediment that it passed through because whatever went in came out. Patur, the Tanakhama believes you don't have to give Shemot Masrot because what went in was water and what came out was water, and there's no part of the wine that is there. There's no part of the wine. There's no chayuv of shmot masrot. Rabbi Yehuda mechayev. Here it says he is chayav because what we assume is that some of the liquid got or the water got absorbed into the grapes or the sediment that's there, and some of the liquid that came out was from the grapes themselves. So you've had an exchange of liquid. So it's not pure water that came out, and therefore there is an obligation to take off shmot and masrot. But you see that's inconsistent in Rabbi Yehuda's position. Over here he's saying in the Mishnah that you do have a requirement of shmot and masrot. Yet before he was suggesting that if it came from an ama aretz and it's temed, you don't have to worry about it because there's no din of Shemot and Masrot. So Gemara says, Hachikam, that's what I mean. Lo nech should do Amei Aretz ala temed. So one answer is that Amei Aretz, the reason that we worry about the fact that they took off Shemot and Masrot is because there's a monetary loss that one takes by separating out Shemot and Masrot. You're giving up a portion of your produce in order to pay the Shemot and Masrot or to give the Shemot and Masrot. And so because of that, Amei Aretz are reluctant to do it because of the loss. By temed, which is a cheap item, it's an item that really has no real value to it, over there, they were not reluctant to give Trumot to Masrot because the monetary loss was insignificant. Never we can assume that they took off Trumot to Masrot. It's not that it doesn't require Trumot to Masrot, it requires it, but they're going to take it off because there's no real loss. Ibai Teima, Nechshadu. Now, some say that they are Nechshad, and they don't take off Trumot to Masrot. Velokasha, they're different types of temed. Ha, Bidarvaka, Ha, Bidupurzani. It depends how you make the temed. One is bidarvaka, which is the sediment. If you pour the water over the sediment, that is a more significant mass. And there, Rabbi Yehuda believes that there's an exchange of water and wine. Had the purtsani, purtsani are pits, or the leftovers of the grape. Over there, he believes that the purtsani do not give an exchange. And if you put water and come out, that temed is not chayav in shmot masrot, even according to Rabbi Yehuda. So that first statement where he says, we're not choshesh with shmot masrot, that's when you use purtsani, where there's no chiyuv shmot masrot, because we assume that the temet is just pure water in that case. For darvaka, if he pours it over the sediment of the wine, There, that's the Mishnah in Masrot, where Rabbi Yehuda requires that one take off Shumot and Masrot. All right, now the Gemara is going to move through the items in the Mishnah and discuss what exactly the issue is. We just did the Chometz Edomi, and we spoke about the problem there, that they put barley in the wine in order to cause the fermentation for the vinegar. Now, but Zeitoma Mitzri. My Zeitoma Mitzri, what is this Egyptian beer? Tan Rav Yosef, it's made up of Tlata, well, this is Tlata or Tilta. It turns out to be the same thing, whether it's three or a third, because each one of them has an equal amount of ingredients here, so it turns out to be a third, which is Tlata Sari. It's made up of a third of barley. Tlata Kurtame, it's made up of a third of, whether this is safflower or saffron, with Tlata Milcha, and a third salt. So that's what the problem is, obviously, is that there's barley in here that causes the possibility of Chametz. Rav Papa Mepik Sari. A papa and the ingredients takes out barley, and he puts back in wheat. And how do you remember who says what? You have Rav Papa here and Rav Yosef. Sisne is your memra. So the two possibilities, Sisne is either Samach Samach, or Sisne is actually a Kli. But it's a Kli that has the word, it's pronounced Sisne, and Sisne has two Samachs in it. And therefore, Rav Yosef is the one who says Sare. So that's how you remember that Rav Yosef is the one who says barley, and Rav Papa is the one who says Chite. So then, Taruluhu, how do they make the beer? First of all, they soak these items together, Vikaluluhu, and then they roast them, Vitachaneluhu, and then they mill them, then Vishataluhu, and they drink them, Midibcha Datzerta, from Pesach until Shavuot. So that's the time period where they make this type of beer and is drunk during that time. Tikamit, someone who is constipated, Mirafile, it acts as a laxative, Udirafi, someone who has already a loose stool, Mikamitle, it constipates him or hardens him. L'chuleh u'lisha u'bra. If for a sick person or a woman who is pregnant, sakanta, it's too dangerous because it might be too effective for them and cause problems from there. So it should only be used on a healthy person. This diuretic or constipator should not be used on not help people who are not healthy and people who are sick. People who are sick is either a person who is sick or a woman who is pregnant who has that category of a chuleh shembo sakana. All right, now, Zoman Shel Tzvaim. So we said this is the dye of the dyers. Hacha Targimu, this is how they translated it. This is Mayim Dechivare. Mayim Dechivare is white water. As Rashi describes over here, it's Mesubim. It's the water of bran. The Tzavi Behu Labo, that they use to color or dye the labo. So there are different explanations here. One of them is to dye the skins, or the other one is that it's used to prime the lacquer. Which is, lacquer is a dye, and so this is used to prime the lacquer so that the dye will take hold. So one of those two things here, but because you have the involvement of subim, mesubim, the water of bran, that's obviously what the problem is here in terms of chametz. Vamilan shel tabachim, the dough of the cooks. So pat tvuah shloi v'yashlish. They use the bread or the dough from grain that did not reach a third of its maturity. They used to put it around the edge of the pot, and it absorbs the froth or the bad odor that comes out of the pot. So it's a material that's used to either absorb the overflow of the pot, or it's used to take off with that which is being boiled out. It'll absorb that which is being boiled out. Because obviously it's made from pot, or it's made out of dough, so that's what the problem is here. And that's why it's restricted. It's Ayidei Tarovet, but it's a problem here on Pesach. B'kolan shel sofrim. Comes to kolan shel sofrim. Rashi in the Mishnah translates kolan as glued, which is glue. It's a glue of the scribes. So here the Gemara explains what is this kolan shel sofrim and what's the problem. So hachar targama, pirura dushkape. It is the glue of the ushkape. Ushkape, Rashi translates them as leather workers, where ushkape sometimes means a cobbler, is a shoemaker. Obviously, because the shoes were made out of leather, there's some connection between the two. But it's the glue of the leather makers or the shoemakers. Shimi mechozna amar, zet tipulan shel bnot ashirim. This is the item that is used by the daughters of the rich. Shimi shayroto tol bnot aniyim, and they leave some of it over for the poor. And that the girls who are poor do not have this, and therefore the rich women who, or the daughters of the rich who do have it, they have set aside some of it to give to the poor. And that is because the way that this is made up, Tipulan Shabnot Hashirim, is made of solit, fine flour, refined flour, which is, again, as we said before, only something that the wealthy had, not something that the poor people had. So they used to leave some of it over to the Benot Sofrim, to the daughters of the Talmidei Chachamim, or the teachers, who were much poorer and could not afford to make this. And then they used this instead of seed or lime as a depilatory, that they used to put it on their skin in order to remove the hair, as well as to soften the skin or to improve the healthiness of the skin. So that's what it was used for. It was used as some sort of caking item that they used to put on that acted as both a depilatory and a moisturizer. So now, Gemara says, Ini, is that really true? V'hatana Rabbi Chiya. Rabbi Chiya gives a summary of our Mishnah. And a summary of Mishnah, he says, Arba'a minei midina. There are four items that are associated with a country in our Mishnah. V'shlosha minei umanut. And there are three items that are associated with a profession. So you have the four items that obviously deal with the countries. Is you have Kutech HaBavli, the Babylonian Kutech. Shechar HaMadi. Chometz HaEdomi. Zeitom HaMitzri. Those are the four countries. Then we had Zoman Shel Tzvaim, which was the dyer's dye. Amilan Shel Tabachim. So now you have two professions. Now we have Kolan Shel Sofrim. So depending on how you translate Kolan Shel Sofrim, according to the first explanation, that we're talking about the glue of the leather workers or of the cobblers, then that's a third profession. But if you explain here that this is an item used by the girls as a depilatory or as a moisturizer, then you don't have a third profession in the Mishnah. And so that would not accord with Rabbi Chiya or Rabbi Chiya's enumeration of the Mishnah. So via Marti Bulan Shel Benot Hashirim, Mai Minei Umanotika. Where's the third profession here? Elamai. So what are you going to suggest here? It's Pirura Dushkape. All right, let's accept your explanation. Your explanation is that it's the glue of the leather workers or the cobblers. Amai Karile. Hi, Kolan Shel Sofrim. If it's about the leather workers, then why does the Mishnah call it the glue of the scribes? It doesn't make sense that you call it the glue of the scribes. If it's not the glue of the scribes, it's the glue of this other profession. So it should say, Kolan Shel Ratzanim Mibayle. It should say the glue of the leather workers. So Amar Rav Hoshea, Lolam Pura Dushkape. No, it is the glue of the leather workers. Amai Karile Kolan Shel Sofrim. Why do they call it Kolan Shel Sofrim? To Sofrim, Nami Madbikim Behu Neirotehem. The Sofrim, the scribes, use it to glue together their papyrus. As Rashi says over here, they have paper that's made up of asavim. So that papyrus, when you want to glue it together, you use this type of glue. So the same glue is used by both professions, both the leather workers and the Sofrim, to glue together items to make them thicker. In the case of the leather workers, it's to put two pieces of leather together to get a thicker piece of leather. In the case of the Sofrim, the scribes, it's to put two pieces of paper together to create a thicker piece of paper. Okay, so Rabbi Lezer Omer, Aptach Shitei Nashim, the adornments, the jewelry of the woman. Gemara says, Tachshitei Nashim Salkadatcho? What do you mean, Tachshitei Nashim? Why is that a problem? Now, Rashi translates Tachshitei Nashim, the adornments of the woman, as Hu Kachol B'Sarak, which is makeup that is used on the face, Ubisamim, and the perfume that they wear around their neck. Those items clearly do not have chametz in them, are not problematic. So obviously that's not what we're speaking about. That's what the Gemara says. It's the items that are used for the attending to the women. Damar of Yudam Rav. So Amar Yudah says, Benot Yisrael shigiu lepirkan, daughters of Israel, I mean the young women of Israel who have yet to reach the age of maturity. Shigiu lepirkan, they reached the age of physical maturity, v'lo higia l'shanim, but they did not reach the age of maturity. They're maturing faster than their age should dictate. So in that case, what they used to do is, because they are aging faster, and they're embarrassed about the physical maturation, they go ahead and they remove the physical maturation from them. So, benot aniim toflototan besid, the poor women or the poor daughters, in order to deal with this, use lime or a plaster of some sort in order to act as a depilatory over here. Benot oshirim, the wealthier women, toflototan besolit, they use this fine flour. Benot malachim, the princesses, beshemen hamor, they use the oil of myrrh. Shenemar, and this is found in Esther, Shishah Chodeshim b'Shemen HaMor. Spend 6 months in the Shemen HaMor. My Shemen HaMor. What is this more that we're speaking of? This more over here. Yehuna Bar Imri Amar Tzatkat. So Tzatkat is either myrrh or cinnamon. One of those two. Yehuna Bar Imri Amar Shemen Zayit Shloi Vishlish. That this Shemen HaMor is actually olive oil, but coming from olives that have not reached a third of their maturation. So they're very unripe olives that give off a certain oil that's good for this purpose. Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Anfiknin, what is Anfiknin? It's Shemen Zayit Shloi Vishlish. That's olive oil, olives that have not reached a third of their maturation. V'lama Sachinoto, Why do we use it? Why do the women use it on their skin? It removes the hair. It acts as a depilatory. And it causes the flesh to be healthy or smooth, soft. It acts as a moisturizer or something that's healthy for the skin, and that's why they use it. The Kolan Shel Sofrim, that we explained before, that it's not, that one of the suggestions was it was about the women. Now over here, we are saying even if that's not the case, then the case of Rabbi Eliezer is saying that that is the issue of the women. Some of the Rishonim, including the Tosafot over here, ask, the Rimi Orleans ask, what's the difference? We have, if in the case where they explained before that the Kolan Shel Sofrim was also this depilatory, what's the difference between the depilatory there and Rabbi Eliezer's depilatory? So he answers up that the depilatory is used in two different areas or functions. He says that one of them is used for hair by the face, and one of them is used for the hair down below, and therefore they are used in different circumstances and have to be of a different consistency. The Bach over here mentions that the Teretzari, the Achamayri Panim Shamala Ubitseva Shal Pnehem, that in one case it's talking about some sort of makeup or something that's put on the skin in order to color the skin or to act as makeup, and that's one of the cases. In the other case, it's a case of a depilatory that's used down below. But in either case, they're trying to separate between that which we mentioned by Kolan Shel Sofrim and that of Rabbi Eliezer, because if they're both talking about this depilatory of the women, then what's different between them? And again, we mentioned the Bach on the Mishnah that says Rabbi Eliezer's point is that it's Chametz Nuksha Ayadei Tarovet, where he's arguing with the Tanakama, who thinks that only Chametz Nuksha period can be problematic, but Chametz Nuksha Ayadei Tarovet is not problematic. Okay, we'll stop over here.